Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Yuyun Zhan.
I'm Alicia García Herrero.
And today we will talk about the recent EU-China summit. This episode is part of Zhonghua Mundus, our series about global China as seen from Europe, which includes our monthly newsletter as well under the same name. The link to subscribe is in the show notes. I am happy to have with us today, joining from Beijing, Li Wei Wang, the deputy chief editor of Caixin Summit and also a senior writer for Caixin Media, one of the best financial outlets in China. Hello, Li Wei. Thanks a lot for joining us. How are you today?
Hello, Yuyun. Very nice joining you.
Let's dive directly into it. On December 7th, 2023, the EU-China summit happened in Beijing. This is the first time that the highest leaders have met in person ever since COVID. Alicia, could you give us a little bit of recap of what happened?
I would say that the summit was a new type of dialogue of the deaf. If you recall, this is how Josep Borrell defined the previous summit, which actually we need to go all the way to April 22 to have that summit, which was an online summit, and it was totally dominated by Ukraine. And the Europeans felt that there was kind of no dialogue or no understanding from China's side. I'm sure China can think the same, but I'm just reporting on what the European delegation felt at the time, that indeed there was no understanding. This time around, I would call it an economic dialogue of the deaf, because in a way, both sides wanted a dialogue, but they had too much on the table in terms of their own expectations to actually have a dialogue. And in a way, they all kind of jump with their own grievances, whether it's a big trade deficit on the EU side, on China's side, why did you bring me to the WTO on anti-subsidy investigation on electric vehicles? You see what I mean? Like, everybody came to the summit with this idea of that, why did you do this to me? And I think that, in a way, overwhelmed the summit. And basically, not even a joint communique was issued. So that's why I call it an economic dialogue of the deaf, which is a pity for this second summit.
Li Wei, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I agree with Alicia. I think expectation management is important going into the meeting. I was also talking to Jörg Wuttke, the former chairman of EU Chamber in China. He basically says, expect nothing from this summit. It's also true that there is no communique from this summit, unlike prior to COVID. I think for several years in a row, there is summit coming out of this EU-China summit. But I think there is also some little, very small progress. I was at the press conference Michel and von der Leyen held at the conclusion of their China trip after they meet President Xi and Premier Li Qiang. So von der Leyen mentioned China promised or say have a commitment to clarify the rule on cross-border data flow, an issue raised strongly by EU business in China, because it will sort of hamper EU or say foreign business ability to do business here in China. But it's also true that von der Leyen mentioned after hearing words from the Chinese side, it's important we see progress. I think this is perhaps the most tangible results coming out of this summit sort of show it's also a challenging summit.
Do you think this matched the objectives from both sides? And what was the purpose of resuming this kind of in-person dialogue?
Every year, basically, EU and China have to have a dialogue. And also the objective, I think, at least from the EU side, is to explain the EU side's concern. And I think von der Leyen mentioned herself, this summit was an opportunity to explain clearly our concerns and seek progress in key areas of our bilateral relations. So I think there are a couple of concerns. Michel sort of categorized in three categories. So subsidy, as Alicia mentioned, this specifically the EU investigation into Chinese subsidy into EVs, and then barriers, in other words, market access, which the EU side want to improve from the Chinese side. And then this year, there is a very strong concern on overcapacity in Chinese sectors, including on, say, solar and on EVs. And the EU side is sinking. So with very severe overcapacity in this area inside China, it's hampering European businesses, both in terms of business in Europe, as many Chinese companies export to Europe, as well as in third markets. So basically, say on Belt Road or say third countries, I think the EU side think this will be a big danger of a dumping round from Chinese producers. And I think von der Leyen specifically mentioned with some markets close to Chinese exports, I think that's referring to US on EVs or say solar panels. There is a bigger danger that these Chinese overcapacity being diverted to Europe. So I think European leadership really want to use this opportunity to express these concerns to the Chinese leadership.
Alicia, do you want to add to that?
I think this point is extremely important, the overcapacity concerns, because frankly, it's not only about China, it's about others. It's about the fact that the EU, rightly or wrongly, is trying to follow WTO principles, even including the anti-subsidy investigations, you know, going to the WTO, not simply imposing tariffs, not even countervailing duties for that matter, which they could, but they are waiting for the investigation. At the same time, because the US is engaging, of course, in actions, including the Inflation Reduction Act, which affect that overcapacity, we see that US imports from China have plummeted. That is, in a way, coming back to Europe. So it's a combination, if I may say, of stagnant demand in China on the one hand, globally, I mean, for every sector, I'm not talking about solar in particular, but that stagnant demand and the US basically reducing its absorption of Chinese imports. So these two things coming together in a way hit Europe. And I think this is why the message was to me a little bit desperate. I mean, the European message for the summit is like, you know, you really need to do something. And I think the readout from the European side clearly shows that something needs to be done. You see, I don't think it's even like, okay, this is fair or unfair, or, you know, no, it's like we can't take this because it's coming from the US, it's coming from China. So I think this is why, in a way, hard to get something concrete from this summit. On the cross-border thing, which I think is very important, cross-border data, the reality is that there had already been a concession, quote-unquote, from China's side for Europe, specifically for Europe, when Vice President Dombrovskis visited China, because this was such a big concern. And I think van der Leyen's comment on we need more than words comes from the fact that nothing has happened yet, although it was supposed to be a very, very urgent matter. So we are hoping, everybody should be hoping that something gets done soon, because this is the one and only specific topic, basically, that needs, you know, immediate action. The rest is very general. Junju is like, okay, we have a big deficit, do something about it. But that doesn't get solved in a day. But the cross-border data, I think if China does something, I think that will be read as very much as goodwill from China's side. It's very, very important to change the tone and the kind of despair of these meetings. We need to clearly change that. And I think this is the best opportunity, the cross-border data arrangements being solved from the Chinese side.
We've talked a lot about what the EU had hoped in the summit. And could you tell us a bit more about what China was hoping for in terms of the objectives of this meeting?
I think China's biggest concern is still this EV subsidy case. I think this question was raised twice during the press conference, and only on the second case, von der Leyen said It's still during the process of investigation, so nothing can be said so far. I think that there is an early point I want to raise. So actually, in yesterday's Central Economic World Conference, there is a sentence under the umbrella of keep high standard opening up. So there is this sentence basically saying paying serious attention to solve cross-border data flow problem. So this is never mentioned in China's sort of a macro level conference, this issue. So I was just thinking foreign, especially US and European big country pressure, would prod China to move on some front that's critical to, say, US or Europe's concern. There is another issue Alicia mentioned earlier. So on Ukraine, I think just the day before the EU-China summit, there is this report that there is a list of Chinese-based companies that is supplying weapons to Ukraine. I think that made the press conference. Three questions were focused on that. Von der Leyen actually mentioned they come up with a list of these companies and actually provided that to the Chinese side. And she says when they are really specific, providing these names of companies, Chinese side would act. So that shows these kind of concern. If you're being really specific and really spot on these issues, Chinese side sometimes do trying to pay attention to solve these issues. It's similar with the fentanyl case in the recent Biden-Xi summit. So U.S. sort of gained some, although this is not something of macro significance.
As you mentioned the U.S. and the recent Biden-Xi summit, I kind of wanted to ask you both on this. We've seen the Chinese leadership has been trying to resume relations and talks with major powers in the world. So compared to the Biden-Xi summit that happened last month, the EU-China summit, was it more of a success or was it on the same level that it's both setting the tone for further developments?
Okay, so first of all, Biden-Xi summit and EU-China summit, these two things are different animals, very different animals. Biden basically can decide for all nation, and frankly, neither Michelle nor von der Leyen can do that. It's just a very economic-centric type of thing. Okay, they can mention about Ukraine, but frankly speaking, it's an economic summit. Biden-Xi was not an economic summit whatsoever. It was really about big things. Yes, you had the fentanyl thing, but all of that is kind of national security. It was a national security summit. Ours was an economic summit. It's very different. So the good thing about Biden-Xi summit for Europe is that it already created a space to kind of put aside big geopolitical issues, including Taiwan. Frankly speaking, I don't understand why we still had this comment from Michelle on Taiwan, because in a way I would have just left that kind of dealt with by Biden-Xi summit. But somehow, ironically, because generally this is not the case, there was this specific comment. So I would say that I would have expected this summit to be more specific than the Biden-Xi summit. And we didn't really get there, which is a pity. And I think we didn't get there, Li Wei is totally right, because of the expectations. There were divergent expectations. I think we would need to work more like the US does on, you know, getting, nailing the 3-4 things we want to get done at every summit. More specificity will only help.
I agree with Alicia. It's a totally different animal. So the Biden-Xi summit sort of have very strong market impact. I think in the 1 or 2 weeks before the Biden-Xi summit, the Chinese market sort of was in an uptrend. Although after the summit, maybe market thinks it's not fulfilled their expectations. So the market come down. For the EU-China summit, I think that the market didn't take notice of the EU-China summit. But on the other hand, I think there are also some other issues aside from the data flow issue that European side really want to kind of make progress. So this market access is still a main area. So I was asking Ambassador Toledo, the EU ambassador to China, after that press conference, saying basically doesn't seem to be any tangible results. He's saying the fact it's in dialogue, it's good. And then when I really press him, he says market access might be something that's more palpable in the coming weeks. So the EU side is hoping to gain market access to for European medical equipment. And I think there are some agreement on geographical indicators. So that's, I think, European agricultural products access into the Chinese market. So in this area, I think Europe really want to make progress in order to make this bilateral economic trade relationship more balanced. I think von der Leyen mentioned they have two separate meetings, first with President Xi and second with Premier Li. On the first one, she sort of mentioned, basically President Xi agreed with the EU side, the need for economic rebalancing. And then in the second meeting with Premier Li, von der Leyen and Michel take a deep dive into these specific issues with Premier Li. And they came up with a list of their, I think, maybe wish list that the EU side want to achieve. And in their market access is still something to be worked on. I think in the coming high-level dialogues, I think it's between minister level in China and commissioner level in Europe. So that's something I think some progress could still be made in the coming months. This will help to kind of balance EU-China trade relations, which I think last year it's the most imbalanced for many years.
So that kind of leads me naturally to our next topic, the road forward.
And we'll talk about it after the break.
As you said, this meeting was a starting point of many things. And then, Alicia Li Wei, in the upcoming months, what other dialogues are ongoing and then what specific topics we should be focusing on?
Well, I mean, some topics are kind of dead, like the comprehensive agreement on investment. There was a little bit of a push from China's side in 2021, even a mention in the previous high economic dialogue in 2022. But of course, Ukraine kind of, you know, just didn't allow for any discussion. Interestingly, it's not been a big issue this time because I think China realizes that there's too many things to deal with first. But at some point, it might come back. And before that, I agree market access will continue. It's interesting to see that the EU Chamber survey actually shows an improvement in market access, which is very much against the tone of the position paper. And in a way, it's contradictory. The main reason is, if you look at the data, is that there's fewer companies answering that question, i.e. those that maybe suffer from difficult market access are no longer there, you know, and I think increasingly there's this decoupling, if I may say, or maybe decoupling is not the right word, but divergence between companies that say, okay, you know what, I'm localized in China, I like this, it's fine, I'm making money, you know, I go for it, big time, full. And the others that are like, because I don't want to localize, because I still need my European suppliers, you name it, I just don't feel comfortable with this. And they are retrenching. So there's these two things. I think it is important going forward to acknowledge this reality. You know, companies, China for China, others not feeling that way. And I think this is something that we need to work at a different level in the same way as the US has set up all kinds of committees, subcommittees to discuss with China. I think Europe needs to do the same. Go more granular, work on what are the real issues for companies. And I think for that, we need a more frequent dialogue, a more like easy, open dialogue, even track 1.5, you know, think tank dialogues on trade, and then, of course, move to the official dialogue. But we don't have enough of that now. So, you know, very, very happy to see that coming.
Li Wei, what do you think?
Yeah, so add to that, I think aside from the trade and economic dialogues, there is also definitely this dialogue on climate. So this time, I think the EU and China renewed their memorandum of understanding on ETS cooperation. So it's the basically carbon market cooperation. I think the EU side is helping China to share experiences or say lessons they gained in building up their ETS for China to build a better ETS. And I think in this, there is the Sony issue of CBAM, which I think earlier this year when EVP Timmermans came, I think the China side really expressed a strong concern on EU CBAM. So the EU and China side agreed that I think 2-3 weeks ago, the EU side sent DG Thomas. I think he's in charge of basically customs unions. So having him coming to China to explain to Chinese authority what's the rationale behind CBAM and what's the facts on CBAM. So I think they also had some public communication. They had this, of course, official discussion with the Ministry of Ecology, but in some public forums, he also expressed China is a main trading partner to Europe. But in the areas that CBAM cover, basically steel, fertilizer, these high carbon emitting areas, EU and China are not major trading partners. What EU import in these areas are mainly from neighboring countries to EU, including, say, Turkey, previously Russia and Belarus. Now it's more Turkey, Canada, and say some African countries. So the amount EU collected through CBAM, most are not from China. And I think he also mentioned some, the revenue number is very small compared to EU-China total trading amount. I think this kind of dialogue, at least to an outsider, not from the Chinese establishment or Chinese official, it's good explanation. So I think this kind of dialogue would help China-EU cooperation going forward in area of climate and environment. Another area maybe there will also be ongoing dialogue is the area of AI. I think this is also raised, this is also discussed this time during EU-China summit. EU side take a strong position that there need to be regulation, couldn't be kind of free flowing environment or say voluntary guardrail as in the US. It have to be binding rules. So Von der Leyen mentioned, although the governance model of the EU and China is not, is different, but both sides agree there is a need to cooperate on a global level on this AI regulation issue. So that's also going to be discussed going forward. I think that's the most important issue nowadays on government's mind.
Indeed, both climate and AI are very important issues, and that requires global reactions. Not a single country can handle this. So I think it's a great direction that we're going for more communication and then more development in this. Before I close the session, do you have any ending remarks?
I just want to concur with both climate and AI. We actually had an event in Beijing a week ago, so on AI regulation. Indeed, in the run-up to the AI Act, which has already been agreed upon at the EU Council, there was this idea that, but China already is regulating AI. I mean, let's face it, the question is, can we converge on our understanding on how it should be regulated? And I think the EU and China have at least this basic concept that such regulation is needed. So yes, I would end by saying that this is quite promising. We may, however, stamp on different values on what how to regulate. But having said that, I think we really need to work hard on this for the benefit of everybody else.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that in prior years, European businesses in China, what they pay most attention to is EU-China relations or a market access issue. This year, it has turned to Chinese economy. So with the Chinese economy in dire situation, Zhang, the current EU chamber chairman to China, is saying last year we had this dramatic reversal. Although dramatic, but it's good. At long last, Chinese government sort of changed strategy, reopened the economy. He is saying, I don't know how long the Chinese government or say Chinese leaders will keep on this very weak support for the economy. So I think this is a major issue to watch. But also on EU-China, I would say among this very dire situation of very weak Chinese economy, overcapacity in, say, EV and solar sectors, and in Europe side, I think German economy is not doing very well. their car companies are particularly not doing very well with this EV revolution. There is area for China and a Chinese company and EU companies to work together. For example, I think Volkswagen invested 5 billion RMB into a Chinese EV maker called XPeng. On one hand, this helped XPeng to avoid dire financial situation caused by China's price war in the EV sector. On the other hand, after this investment, XPeng is basically helping Volkswagen build EVs. I think Volkswagen earlier model, EV model, doesn't work very well. In this sense, EU and Chinese company can really work together. I think, as Jürg Wuttke was mentioned, in some sectors, European company is lagging now, and China is like a fitness club for European businesses because of this very intense competition. So going forward, there might be an area that China-EU companies can work on. And to solve this EV subsidy issue, I think one resolution would be, as Alicia mentioned, use this countervailing duty or say minimum kind of export price to Europe, as in the earlier case of solar panel export. But I think there is also a strand of opinion, including in Europe, that Europeans should approach Chinese companies to build factories in Europe. So letting them have subject to the same environmental rules, to the same sort of pressure from trade union, and help provide jobs for Europe, and also to kind of alleviate some of lack of talent. Basically, on engineering, there is a lack of skilled engineers. So this is something that if, say, a Chinese company could really move to Europe, that's something that could be beneficial to both countries, and also to alleviate this pressure arising from this overcapacity and too much export.
Li Wei, I'm going to react. I know we're out of time, but I think this is quite important. I hear you. I've heard that in Beijing many times. That's the solution. Let's allow for FDI and have cars produced by Chinese engineers in Europe. That doesn't alleviate other problems, meaning what is the European labor force going to do? And not only that, you're talking about the gym. I've heard Jürg Wuttke saying that too. Frankly speaking, a lot of what is happening now is not even market driven. Put it this way, would Chinese companies operating in Europe producing EVs want to receive the same subsidies they receive in China to be competitive? Bear in mind that the subsidies would have to be double, because the cost of producing a car in Europe is double that of China, putting aside subsidies. So, you know, like it's not an easy solution. I hear you, but I'm just saying that it solves some problems. It doesn't solve all the problems. I think starting by having a fair level playing field in China would be my priority. And that's something that I hope we can work on. That's all.
I think I was writing something on this EV subsidy. There is a reader write a comment below my article saying how good it would be if Chinese government lower the tariff for Mercedes and BMW. So that sort of could alleviate the pressure. So Chinese could enjoy their Mercedes and the BMW, and there will be less kind of protectionism from the European side. So I think I do agree with Alicia. It need to be more comprehensive solution, and also we cannot avoid the unfair competition here in the China market. So that's also what I share.
Thank you, Li Wei. Thank you, Alicia, for joining me today for the conversation. I would like to remind our listeners that you can read in open access all the analysis by Bruegel researchers on our website, bruegel.org. And until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.